Welcome back to Reflections, your host Jorge Gonzalez. And basically, I'm kind of honing in on spending time with family and how I go about it and you know, what brings it on, etc. And one of the things I did, and, you know, these are decisions, a full day, taking a grandson back to Hartford. He's a freshman at the University of Hartford. And again, you know, an opportunity to, first of all, you know, get to know a university that I knew very little about. I was very, very impressed with the beauty of the campus and how it developed. I asked the question of the we drove both him and his girlfriend back. I was our daughter-in-law did the driving. My son was working, so we went to, it's about a 2.5 hour drive from Boston to Hartford. And I asked one of the questions as we were arriving. I said, I noticed that everything seemed to be relatively, you know, new construction. The construction was a little bit, you know, not modern, but you could tell that everything was relatively new. And I asked, I said, when was the school founded? And my grandson did not have the idea, but his girlfriend said in the mid 50s. And as we were coming back from Hartford back to Boston after leaving them, fixing their vacuuming their carpet. By the way, I could not believe how much stuff they took back with them. You know, you would have thought, you know, a knapsack and maybe a small little, you know, but they, both of them had tons of stuff. I don't know how the heck we fitted everything in the SUV. But anyway, that's beside the point. But the question, you know, in the 50s and on the way back, I said, well, let me see if she was right, and let me see how this school was developed. It took me a little while, but it was incredibly well documented, you know, history of the University of Hartford. And she was right. It was founded in 1957. And then it went through decade by decade based on the different, they've had 7 presidents, which is pretty good, you know, really good consistency. They're on the 7th, who've just started. A little bit like Singapore. You have to have consistency. Even though it started in 57, there were 2 or 3 schools, one in the YMCA, another one was the, I think it was the Hartford School of Art or something like that. That was in 1877. So the, even though the campus and the school itself with the name was, you know, 57, there were remnants that went way back into the roots and traditions of Hartford. And Hartford, of course, is a city known for the insurance. The Springfield and Hartford are close together, and it's known for the insurance. And there's a lot of wealth and well-tapped and great loyalty to the particular city. They've been able to raise quite a bit of funds, and they put together a great university. And it has different schools, business and engineering. He's an engineer. Electrical engineering is what he's starting. And they have a beautiful building. The roof is vegetation, you know. She's studying business and is a minor in ballet. So they're strong in the artistic world, fine arts and all. But they have, you know, liberal arts and communication, nursing, physical therapy. It's a really broad-based university, about 4,500 students. So it's not smaller. So basically, it's like, you know, most of the Ivy Leagues and all, like, right, top 5,000 more or less. I was really impressed with the history and how well it was put together, and you got to have a really good feel of what had been emphasized. And one of the things is we're involved with not only environment but with the community, and they brought in to the campus different schools. They have one which is pre-kinder and goes, I think, through third or fourth grade, and they integrated into the university, and they have one in high school, and they're very involved not only with the Hartford community, but they brought in these facilities as part of the campus. Very impressed, with all of that. Both of them seem to be very happy, and both of, you know, based on the history and the development, they picked the concentrations that are really at the forefront of setting University of Hartford apart. So these are the kind of things when you come and you're there with your children, your grandchildren, and you go with them to where they study and where they work. It develops the kinds of knowledge and the close ties that help, you know, the relationships, which is, as I said at the beginning, is so critical. I was just joking that there's, you know, there's a, this this it's called FOMO, stands for fear of missing out, and I suffer from FOMO. I don't go to a particular activity or go to a particular trip or whatever. I suffer from that I'm going to be missing out on something important. So I'm as you all know, I always complain or sometimes I don't know both, but too much on my plate, and that's because of this FOMO, fear of missing out. Sitting at a Taipei, which you have to get too many things at the same time, etc. But FOMO is good when you know you make a decision to go to this thing. I could have stayed in Boston and, you know, just read and taken it easy that day, but I'm super happy I went with him and learned about the school and his experiences with it. And there's another similar. It's called JOMO, which is the joy of missing out. And so these are the two poles. There are people who really enjoy saying no and not doing things. And just relaxing in front of the TV or, you know, reading or staying home or whatever. Those are the two poles. And I imagine there's a happy medium, but it's all very personal. I mean, and that is the important message. You just have to see where you and the spectrum fit in and go there, but always conscious of, to make sure you don't, like it's an addiction for alcohol or for caffeine or for whatever. Is also, you have to be careful you don't become too addicted on the FOMO, so that you're not relaxing and as I said, you know, reducing that stress so it's not overly powerful and hurting you. That was a decision that was well worth it. As I'm kind of, you know, halfway through this this segment, there's an article in an area that I found the article really interesting. It is by Fernando Cabanillas on es acabar con el Parkinson, un plan audaz. And it's an article of, let's see, what is it, the 9th of January. And it relates to a book that he's recommending. It says that this is a plan. It's El Plan del Parkinson, the Parkinson Plan, and published by neurologists Ray Dorsey and Michael Okun, O-K-U-N. And the PACT, P-A-C-T, is the acronym for the four pillars, which are, you know, prevention. The second one is advocate. And the third is care. And the fourth is treatment. And so he goes in and into these four, this book, and he's just, Fernando Cabanillas is describing, he goes into the prevention, which interestingly, it's more in the chemical, that there are chemical substances that are harmful, but I don't know whether the book or whether it's Fernando Cabanillas. I'd like to read the book because I've been fascinated. I think one of the things that we most fear as we age is dementia, is Parkinson's, is Alzheimer's. It's something that we all want to see how we can avoid or at least delay as much as possible. So this whole area is so the first one is prevention, and it's more towards chemicals. And in fact, one of the interesting things, you know, living near a golf course where there's a lot of herbicides and chemicals is not recommended, which I don't know. There's benefits in all, and as a golfer, you wonder. The second one is advocate, which is basically to bring to the forefront the need for investment and research and medicines to go after this particular area of disease, which he says like happened with AIDS, and he says that in 2024 in the States they approved a national plan to end Parkinson's as a federal strategy, and recognizes that Parkinson's is not inevitable, and that our inaction, you know, is not should not be an alternative. So at least it's a little bit, you know, optimistic with respect to the advocate section. Care is that challenge that we have now, you know, the caregivers, and then the medical doctors and all in this area, and this needs a lot more needs to be done in order to give across the board, you know, care and both by, you know, to the people that are on site, starting with Parkinson's or suffering from it. So that's the third column, and the last one is treatment. And there's still haven't come up with anything fantastic, but there's a lot of things happening, and there's optimism in that regard. He excellent article on an area I'm thinking I mentioned before I lost my best friend to Alzheimer's. And the other day, having lunch with another very, very good friend who's suffering from Alzheimer's. In both those cases, thank God they because Alzheimer's can change somebody's personality. But in both cases, the Alzheimer's has not changed their personality in terms of they're still, you know, kind and appreciative and grateful people, and it's nice to be with them, you know, even you can tell that they're not following things yet, but they're smiling when you smile, and they're enjoying the meal, and you can tell they're enjoying the company. And that's really good, because sometimes I don't know what happens with some, that the personalities change. They become very antagonistic, aggressive, obnoxious, and that's kind of tough. At least the two that I've been with, and well, actually the three. But there's another cousin. I don't think it's that, but it's, you know, mental thing is not what it used to be. But at least all three are not antagonistic. They still continue to be very kind, very very pleasant people to be with. So that's an area. And of course, you know, as we age, and we're working to, you know, with exercise and nutrition and mental forcing our minds to remain young. As you know, my mantra is to die young, as old, as late as possible. Not as old, to die young as late as possible is my mantra. And one of the critical things is that the mind is still young. You're still looking to learn. You're still looking to challenge things. And you're conscious of things that are happening. So, you know, that in that area, this article by Fernando Cabanillas has been really, really great. Having friends and family members that are there and just wondering what we can do to keep ourselves as we age. We want longevity. But we all want longevity that it has a quality of life, not only for ourselves, but a quality of life that's also for the people around us. What you know, and only God is going to decide that. Or fate if you don't believe in God. But there's things that we can do and we should do. And that's part of the things that I try to put forth in this program. So we've come to the end of the third segment and the end of the program. I wish you the best. I hope you've enjoyed some of the reflections I've had from the Boston area. Take care. Que Dios lo bendiga. See you next week.
Allegro WIPR 91.3 FM was proud to present Reflections, hosted by Jorge González, reflecting on events with our well-being in mind.